Welcome to the show, Mike Benny.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, Mike, I didn't know which role or tag to put against you because you have so many hats that you wear. Anyone who knows anything about wine has read or listened to something you've said about wine. So,
well, I appreciate very much you reaching out and always enjoy having conversations with the glitterati of radio. I started in radio, so I always feel kindred with those that pursue the great art that it is.
Thank you. Sam Isherwood is here. So Sam's the GM at Tarawarra.
Hi, Mike.
Yep, g'day, Sam.
How are you?
We've known each
other for a very long time.
Yeah. I know. I think I've watched you grow up, which is a little sad for me, but great for you.
Well, it's only a reflection of the great people around me who were there in the very early days, I guess. And Sam, you know, always grateful for having you be a kind word and a nice person to be around when I was starting out some 25 years ago or so.
Mm. Thank you.
So it's been a great journey for you, and you know, one of the things Sam and I were chatting about is your collaboration with the guys that you call Brian Wine, don't you? So it's Peter Dredge as well as Joe Holyman, yeah.
That's correct. Yeah, Peter Dredge and I first met at the Len Evans tutorial in 2010, and we were sort of forewarned that each other would be there and that it might be a kind of, you know, better version of the Clash of the Titans, but that we'd immediately become very firm friends. And indeed, that's exactly what happened. And I'd known Joe through the wine trade for sort of 15, 16 years. Well, let's try and reverse that. My math isn't particularly good. That's why I write and talk for a living. But somewhere around about 2005, Joe Holyman and I met, and I started doing vintage with him in 2010. And then Peter Dredge was across at Bay of Fires, and when he was idle, he'd come across to Joe's place, and the three of us became quite a kind of, you know, weird version of the Tasmanian Three Musketeers, just slightly more stained in grapes and perhaps smelling a bit more like beer and cigarettes.
Yes. And the only time you use a sword is probably when you take the top off the neck of a champagne bottle or something.
Oh, I'm a card-carrying, do-not-saber kind of guy. So.
Excellent.
That's one of my things. I'll leave other people to it.
Just be in the audience, right? Much safer.
That's right.
So, mate, given all of the things you've done in wine and written about and spoken about and tasted, we're going to take you into emerging territory and probably not as comfortable territory, and that is the category of zero and low alcohol wines.
Yeah, look, it's something that actually, contrary to the discomfort that it may cause a lot of people, something that I started to invest in out of interest quite early on. And I think with my retail hat on, which is, of course, being one of the co-owners of P&B Wine and Liquor Merchants in Sydney, we really leaned into it. We could see that there was a lot of really great product, if you were patient enough to sift through it, that would work for those who are looking to switch out, go sober, or just basically drop the volume of consumption. Mm. And so the investigation of that was really pleasing for me. And so I've kind of leaned into it as a little sphere of interest for myself, and feel very much so that there's a, of course, I mean, we're seeing statistically the rising currency of such products, but something to be in the quiver of things that I know about so that I don't feel like I'm sitting on the outside as that category grows, and hence have invested quite a lot of time in tasting and working with those products.
Yeah, and I think the way you summarised the reason for it and the reason for why people who drink wine might also be able to include it in their repertoire, because it's not about wine for teetotalers. It's a wine for, as you say, all of these reasons why you still want to have a glass of something, you know, beautiful that you got from the cellar or someone's brought along, but you might want to just dilute the amount of the volume of alcohol you're having in your week, particularly, say, and you just have a few, like a zero beer or, you know, low or zero wine around the other stuff.
Well, that's it. They're sort of attractive speed humps in some respects.
Mm.
And I think while we're currently talking on a wine-focused show, the important thing to recognize is that there's almost a democratization in the no-alcohol realm, in that while wine is one part of that, and of course there's, I guess, two strands of what wine looks like in the no or low-alcohol camp. One is that is pure play wine that has been de-alcoholized, filtered to be produced as a lower alcohol or zero alcohol wine. And then those products that are switch-ins for wine that are produced from something else and typically bolstered with botanicals or tisanes and teas and concentrates that make them a flavor profile and weight that's similar or akin to a wine occasion. But that sort of starts melting on the edges into the category of zero alcohol cocktails, zero alcohol tea-based beverages, zero alcohol beer, and of course it sort of becomes this amorphous mass that stretches away from wine. And indeed, I think that a lot of people are utilizing the breadth of the category as those attractive speed humps, and not just focusing on wine. And of course, I'm sure we'll narrow the lens down onto wine, non-alcoholic and low alcoholic, in this program. But I guess the preface is to consider it a much more broader reaching category that sits between our wine drinking, if we're focusing on wine.
Mm. Yeah, and that's very much the you know angle that I'm coming from for this, and that will be something that our audience will embrace and enjoy the discussion at least. Probably one of the really basic litmus test, I suppose, is let's help people navigate. The wines that are available in that category at retail, and when you're standing there, and typically at the moment, the person who is giving you wine advice has not tried it, and so you go, well, which one, you know, is it sweet? I don't know, but that one sells better than that one. Well, that's not the answer, because if you're going to spend $20 on the one on the left or $20 on the right, one of them tastes like Ribena and one of them is actually acceptable. That's, you know, you don't want to be just wasting your money.
Yeah, that's right. And it's very difficult because a lot of retail, unless you go to one of the very few online or bricks and mortar zero alcohol shops, albeit that there's been a few that have struggled conceptually to be financially viable. Of course, there's some that are a great success and continue to excel. But unless you go to one of those stores that focuses on the non-alcoholic category, it's actually quite hard to get salient advice on these products. And it's very hard to navigate as a consumer because your expectation is that you're going to get something that tastes like the wine you love. Hence, when you see something that says Chardonnay on the front label or Riesling on the front label or Prosecco on the front label, there's a kind of expectation. But what comes with zero alcohol or low alcohol wine is, of course, a more diffuse and dilute flavour profile, which either has to be accepted or not. And I will say that at the apex of the best examples, they get more or less as close as possible to what wine's weight and texture should be. But by and large, what's in the market, unfortunately, and I've worked my way through just about everything I can possibly get my hands on, and that's not a small amount by any means. I'm just not trying to sound like a dickhead. But the number of no-alcohol wines that I've tried and continue to try, the flavour profile and texture just aren't up to scratch. And so that navigation is very difficult. For me, what I would be leaning into is the wines that typically, on the whole, get closest to what they should look like would be those that are trying to mimic affordable sparkling wine. I think with vigorous bubble, high acidity, crunchy texture, which is all possible with zero alcohol wine, and a leaner, racier fruit profile, then you're kind of getting into the zone, which is kind of great.
Yeah. And there's some really available examples. I know I've tried the Grant Burge Prosecco, which really is it's very acceptable as a sparkling wine. And it's. There are some good examples, and I think you're right. In setting up for this, we had some wines sent in as samples, and you know the guys at Australian Vintage, so they do they look after McGuigan and Tempest 2 and Not Guilty and a whole range, you know, Nepenthe and things. So, but they sent in quite a few examples, and I'm sure you've seen all of these.
I've seen quite a few, and I think there's some successful examples amongst all those producers that they look after. There's obviously a diversity of styles that sit underneath the banner of the larger charter of Australian vintage. If you were to sort of say, what do I lean into in terms of sparkling wine particularly, I feel like Brown Brothers has done a very good job with their Prosecco. The sort of very focused non-alcoholic brand plus and minus, I think, has achieved a Blanc de Blanc that has, you know, reasonable weight and texture and decent sort of carriage of what I'd expect from a sparkling wine. And indeed, I have found the McGuigan Zero Dry Sparkling, you know, an appropriately bright and gluggable zero alcohol wine. And I think one other thing is perhaps that looking at these sparkling wines in the zero alcohol, trying to find maybe something to add into them that makes them more interesting is totally fine. I mean, most people have enjoyed a mimosa in their life or a, you know, Campari spritz. And of course, there's great non-alcoholic alternatives to, let's call it, orange bitter liqueurs that are Campari-esque.
Yeah.
To kind of mitigate what might be a shortfall in the sparkling wine, you know, bolster it with something else. And don't be afraid of that, because if anything, that kind of action is an enjoyable process when you're not consuming alcohol. You sort of feel more kindred with those around you who might be making cocktails or whipping up a gin and tonic or whatever. And I think there's quite a lot of that is in the performance of what we're expecting when we're sitting down to drink wine with friends.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you make a really good point, Mike. It's not about replacing the wines that we all love with alcohol, with non-alcohol or low-alcohol wines. Like, we're not going to get that same experience, obviously. But having fun in the theatre of, you know, whether it be, yeah, mixing a Aperol Campari type, you know, with a sparkling wine that is low alcohol or no alcohol, then, that makes sense. It's just changing that replacing one with the other. That's, to me, the most important thing when I think about low or no. But, yeah, I mean, just the processes that you go around to, whether it be reverse osmosis or distillation, I mean, fundamentally you are taking out a lot of those aromas, but or you know, tannins, but ideally, you know, sparkling or white wines, you seem to still retain some of those important aromas or, you know, things that we love about wine. So, do you have any other examples? I mean, you mentioned Brown Brothers Prosecco. Any other, you know, go-to for you that you would, you know, help, that would help us navigate this area?
Yeah, look, and this is an unfortunate theme, because a lot of us wish to rah-rah for the Australian wine industry particularly and for businesses that work within the Australian wine community. But the best examples that I've found of non-alcoholic wine in my journey around this category have been from Germany and Spain. And so while not widely available in Australia, but is available in Australia, there is a producer from Germany called Kolon Null, which is K-O-L-O-N-N-E, and then a new word, N-U-L-L, whose charter started with actually going to really high-quality German wine producers and saying, can we buy fruit from you? So it wasn't just about finding the kind of more conveniently priced mass market wine and then de-alcoholizing. This was about really creating off a high base something that would try and, you know, in their mind, resonate with people who experience German wine. And that's everything from sect sparkling wine to rosé through to Riesling from both, you know, from a small plot of land between Nahe and Mosel. This is really high quality wine that's been then brought to a no alcoholic position. And so it's a really interesting place for these wines to be, because they're a little bit more expensive than we'd typically expect from non-alcoholic wine. But the actual quality, weight and texture, particularly important in this conversation, is all there. And also the touchstones of the wines themselves. The Riesling particularly looks like a pretty decent Riesling from Germany, albeit that, let's say, the evocative nature of terroir is taken away from that wine in some respects, it still manages to make you recall delicious experiences with German Riesling. So they've been somebody that I've really found very enjoyable, and they're actually a producer that's growing grapes now. They've planted their own plots to make non-alcoholic wine, which is a really interesting commitment. Obviously, there are those that already grow grapes and then make non-alcoholic wine. Of course, that's sort of a given. That's an obviousness. But to actually be successful enough to want to plant vineyard to make non-alcoholic wine is a concept that's almost a bit beyond me. But there it is.
Well, they're obviously in it, boots and all, right? They're thinking this is going to be a serious category.
Well, that's right. And I guess if you're at the top end of it all, then leading with best practice is a really important thing. And of course, that's not saying that others in the non-alcoholic category are not applying best practice. Of course they are. But this is, I guess, the next level when you're actually now planting crops specifically for the non-alcoholic category rather than utilizing what you have. But not to, you know, pause on that. The other producer that I've found really quite outstanding in this category is Senorio La Tautia. And this is a producer from La Mancha in Spain. And they produce a range of wines that just seem to, again, meet the qualifiers that I find attractive in terms of weight, texture, and particularly the most outstanding red wine that I've tried that's non-alcoholic, which is produced from Tempranillo grapes and actually seems to fill the palate in a really pleasing and lush way. The second best that I've tried in the past is Giessen's Merlot, albeit it's a little sweet. But again, when I was speaking to the winemaker who produces the non-alcoholic wines for Giessen at the Piccolo Non-Alcoholic Festival, which was some time ago now, but you know, a really great celebration of all things non-alcoholic that occurred in Melbourne on a single day. The conversation around really focusing on how to build texture back into the wine was quite interesting. And it was through a variety of techniques, and obviously retaining some residual sugar is important in that, but just a really concerted effort to not just take alcohol away and then leave people with what's remaining, but to actually build back into the wine weight and texture. And I think the Giessen Merlot and this Senorio della Tautia is the two that really sort of stand out from the crowd.
We might get these wines written down. I might put them on the Wine to Australia Instagram for people after the show. So because for instance, that one, the Senorio della Tautia. Do the guys sell it at PNV wine merchants, or where could people get it?
We sell one of the wines, just the red. That's the wine that stood out for us in terms of quality that we kind of pitch at. But I think online websites like Sons Drinks, perhaps Dan Murphy's has some of the stock as well. Craft Zero potentially as well. I jump onto these websites to have a look now and then just to see what is happening in the market. But I assume that these more focused retailers would be all across this sort of wine category. Craft Zero and Sons Drinks were two that came straight to mind.
So, Sam, did you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, it's interesting, you know, to think about Riesling and growing Riesling for low or non-alcoholic wines. Obviously, the variety lends itself to, you know, being picked at a lower Beaumet. So, what's fascinating is then we jump to Tempranillo and to get that, you know, sort of spectrum of aromas or tannins.
And also the mouthfeel.
Really important. Fascinating. I want to try them now.
I want to try it too.
It's that curiosity, isn't it? The challenge of making these.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wines.
Mark, I think the important part for people to understand when they are sort of considering this is there's a difference, isn't there, between de-alcoholized wine is really what we're chasing here for a wine drinker.
Yeah, that's right. The there's obviously a couple of different methods. Sam quite rightly brought that to the table quite early in this conversation, but it's primarily we're talking about wine where the alcohol is removed. And
so, like, it's made as a proper, it's made as a wine, and then they take it out as opposed to stopping it early, yeah?
That's right. And there's sort of three main methods for that. One is, as Sam mentioned before, the vacuum distillation, which sees alcohol removed at low temperatures. And then typically people will blend back in elements to produce a bit more volume and flavour and character. The big one, and particularly for people like Giessen, who I think is arguably the world's largest producer of non-alcoholic wine, or the number one selling non-alcoholic wine in the world for their Sauvignon Blanc. They use a spinning cone column, which again is low temperature evaporation and condensing, but it's a centrifugal process rather than just the plain distillation vacuum. And these are kind of the two main methods. And then there's some people who use reverse osmosis and a sort of filtration system that can kind of take away elements of alcohol and other profiles in a wine. And then typically people will blend back in either sugar or other elements, again, flavorings, concentrates and similar, to try and bolster additional texture and flavor in wine, particularly with the red wines. But I guess the category also stretches into low alcohol wine, which can be a mix of producing a regular wine and then bringing that alcohol level down to a sort of midway point, somewhere between 5% and 8% alcohol, which of course is a level of alcohol that exists already for things like Moscato or for Rieslings from Germany, or I mean even in Australia, but sort of higher than off-dry category white wines. And then I guess the other part of this category to discuss is, again, as sort of preambled, the category of things that defy categorization but are for wine occasions. And these are often produced with the base of verjuice, so obviously a grape-based product, and then blended with different ingredients. And I'm citing here producers like Non, N-O-N, who have really captured a great deal of attention in the market alongside the non-alcoholic wine category. And indeed, you'd find Non in most high-quality restaurants and bars as the sort of wine-based alternative, and they sort of leaned into more creative winemaking styles. So their sparkling wines are more or less produced in a kind of kombucha-like way.
Yeah.
To sort of mimic the Petiot natural wine styles in the market. There's a sort of textural white or skinsy white alternative, light fresh reds that are delivered chilled, and then some things that just totally blow the category out of the water. But they've been very interesting, and there's smaller producers like Giddy, G-H-I-D-D-Y, who have been producing in a similar kind of way off the base of teas and verjuice and then bolstering with flavours and flavourings of various origins. You know, a lot can be botanical or fruit-based. And so these are, I think, some really interesting alternatives that in some respects, I guess, sit a bit more kindred with things that I like drinking that aren't wine that have been de-alcoholized. When you think about your great restaurant experiences, particularly at the higher end these days, and you look at the menu and it says matching wines, and of course this is something we find very exciting, there's also the matching non-alcoholic, and a lot of these restaurants are producing their own, whether it be an infusion, a tea blend, their own house-made kombuchas or ferments or similar. This is where these sort of products kind of sit at a little bit more of an elite level that feel a little bit more kindred with the dining experience or similar. They're not just for glugging with legs dangling in a swimming pool, albeit you can do that, no problem. You know, for me, I'm just hanging off my super yacht eating prawn sandwiches. You know? But these wines have a kind of a sort of slightly more sophisticated feel to them in some respects. No matter how much we might be pursuing that through de-alcoholized wine, they just feel a bit more craft and artisan, and therefore, and they're priced accordingly, which isn't for everybody, and I understand that. But I really like this space in the market, this sort of inventiveness and it's for the wine occasion, but it's not trying to be wine. And I think that's kind of the tangent that I really like leaning into in some respects.
Yeah, I love the fact that people are putting together their pairing of non-alcoholic products. I've seen it at Tarawarra, but within the restaurant, the whole team get involved. So whether it be back of house, front of house, that creativity that comes into it and experimentation, pairing, flavours and, whether it be kombucha-like products. It's really great to see. And you see, there's some terrific palates out there as well. So, the chef who's putting together an amazing menu all of a sudden becomes the creator of the non-alcoholic list of our beverages. So, really cool.
You make a really good point there, Sam. It's interesting. The art of being a sommelier is trying to get as close as possible, particularly with food and wine matching, let's say, getting as close as possible to making that final condiment in a glass for whatever the chef has put on the table. And that's kind of the ultimate goal.
Yeah.
But when you make your own, like you're talking about the creative inputs at Tarawarra or similar, whether it be at Vue du Monde or at Attica or whatever, and also at restaurants that are much more casual. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty casual places if you want them to be, but, local bars and similar, you're actually able to craft something that gets way closer than you can ever get with a wine that's produced in isolation from those dishes. And so that's kind of where this sort of draws the bow around the sommelier experience of non-alcoholic product in a much more keener way. And that's why I'm excited as well.
Yeah, it's a fascinating category that is emerging. And I feel when you explore it into the sort of beers and things, it's the beer guys have done a really good job now. I think there's quite a number that you could be drinking. It's really acceptable as an alternative. Even the one that surprised me was the Guinness Zero.
Right.
It is so similar, and I nearly prefer it to the real one, which is probably nearly more powerful than I can handle, taste-wise. It's so worth trying.
I hadn't actually seen that product anywhere near me in the market. I'd seen it online, so I'll go and
And it still has the little widget in there, so it still makes the froth the same and all that. It's pretty cool. I was really quite – I'm thinking, there's no way they can get this to be, close, but it really is.
Fantastic.
Now, Christopher, one of our listeners, and thank you, Christopher, he has texted in about the Barossa Wine Cartel, so Josh Pfeiffer in the Barossa.
Yeah.
He has a range of no-alc wines. Have you come across any of those?
Yeah, look, if I was going to segue from talking about non and giddy, and, as just previously explaining, these are wine occasion beverages that are non-alcoholic that sort of, fit in a kind of kindred space to non-alcoholic wine. Those Barossa Wine Cartel wines are fantastic that are non-alcoholic. I mean, perhaps my favourite is his rosé, which he produces with cherry juice, verjuice and Murray sea salt, I think, without giving away his ingredient list, but I think that's kind of the deal. And they're sort of, again, this is a winemaker, pure play winemaker, now saying, I'm not going to de-alcoholize what I've got. I'm going to pick the verjuice and produce things that feel, elementally like wine, but aren't. And they're creative and interesting and really good. Again, money where mouth is, and I'm not trying to stroke my business, but we do stock these products in my retail hat.
So with that retail hat on, give us your retail address, online retail address.
Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, please.
Okay. It is PNV, so the letter P and then V, merchants.com. You'll see that there's a particularly high commitment to non-alcoholic product. And as you walk into our flagship store in Newtown, on the left-hand side is a gigantic deli fridge with about 40 or 50 products alongside a little section that's dedicated to non-alcoholic spirits. And as I said, it's a very big money where your mouth is consideration in that it's a very large part of what we do, and also trying to support the sort of more fledgling products that have come into the market. And I'd you know, cite here just because I think these are some of the most brilliant products on the Australian market, but Tina, T-I-N-A, This Is Not Alcohol, made by a couple of really brilliant women down in Melbourne. It's a tea-based sparkling cocktail that just seems to have hit a really high note amongst non-alcoholic products. And then Gruppetto, G-R-U-P-P-E-T-T-O, which are spritzers produced by Matt Bax, who used to own the tiny little 12-person standing room only cocktail bar called Bar Americano in Melbourne. And his spritzers in a can are impossibly good and taste, chuck a blood orange into a big wine glass filled with ice and pour one of those over it, you're drinking a spritz. I mean, he's just nailed it.
Wow.
So there's a couple of extras.
Yeah, that's awesome. All that is what it's about, right? Because, Sam and I were chatting before we came on air and she said, well, you know, wouldn't it be better to just sit there with a glass of water? Well, yes, but not if you're getting something like this, you know. You've got that fun in a glass and you're also doing, you know, for whatever reason you're not wanting to have alcohol in that glass, it's a thoroughly good and, in you know, yum drink.
Yeah, and just experiencing those flavours and also challenging your own palate with, different, you know, whether it be fruit or tea or, you know, whatever it is, it's important.
And I think as well, and we'd be familiar with this, again, it's a wine-focused show that we're on, but when we go and drink with our friends and loved ones, we start with a cocktail or a beer and we shift into maybe a glass of something frisky to get us going that might be wine-based and then we, you know, jump into maybe a little fun-loving cocktail or something similar and maybe have a little sip of, you know, an interesting Amaro or have a vermouth. And we're not monofocused when we're consuming either food or a single alcoholic beverage. I mean, at times, sure, a bottle of wine on the couch on a Wednesday night. But when we're really kind of trying to create a bit of culture around an event, be it that most of mine are pretty uncultured, but anyway.
That way, right?
I was going to say, I take my time with my cooking, that's for sure. But that we have this array of things that just help us switch out. And I think that's, you know, I said attractive speed humps before, but the switch out thing is an important thing too. It's just, it's a peace of mind for our own health and well-being. It's the ability to not go home and feel regret. And then the following day's worth of anxiety that I know some people go through when excess consumption occurs. And just being a bit more, I guess, focused on one's own well-being is a more attractive quality these days. It sort of fits very strongly into a lot of particularly younger generation value systems, whether it be the process and provenance of the product people are consuming, or if it's about, getting out there in activewear and spruiking the quality of life that people are enjoying, particularly through the lens of social media, alcohol fits into that. And so all this kind of kaleidoscope of products just really gives people an arsenal just to be a bit better about things, whether it be for their own posturing and posing at times or whether it actually be about real genuine health concerns and well-being focus. And I applaud all of it, really.
Mm.
Well said.
Yeah, absolutely. Mike, thank you. This is, I think we might, you know, it'll be something that we keep talking about. And when there are representations of a very close, you know, wine-related product that, or, you know, zero wine product that, people want to call out, I think it's worth texting in or, you know, sending a message to our Instagram, whatever, and yours, Mike. So pnvwinemerchants.com, that's
pnvmerchants.com.
There you go, pnvmerchants.com. That's a good place to start, and then you can move out from there, I guess, from with your search. But I'll catch up with you to just grab a couple of these the internationals that you've quoted, just so that people can kind of look it up. Mike, thank you. It's an interesting journey, and probably one thing we haven't covered off is, you know, people do ask, well, why are zero beers and zero wines still the same price? And it's because, yes, there's no alcohol tax, but there's a lot of extra process that goes on to make them happen. So I think it's fair enough, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you talk to any brewer who was formerly brewing beer, let's call it, and now brews non-alcoholic beer, they would tell you that the process and volume of input that goes into a non-alcoholic beer is way more than producing a regular beer. With wine, you've made the wine, so then you've got to now work on the process to take away an element of that wine. So let's say, theoretically, a wine takes 3 months to get to a bottle, then there's this other process that needs to go on top of that. So even if that takes a short period of time inside the winery, the consideration for that wine, the selection of the wine, the setting aside of that volume of wine, I mean, there's a lot of process that's additional. And to create a good product, there's a lot of research and development that takes place before all that occurs, let alone the fact that you've got to take a punt with producing something that might have a lesser shelf life in some respects, or that may not draw the gaze of people as immediately as a fully alcoholized product. There's a lot of considerations that go into it. And I just say as well that, if you know, supporting any sort of diversity in terms of cultural edifice is really important. And trying things and seeing where they fit into your lifestyle, maybe they won't. That's cool. But at least giving them a go before dismissing them for a price point is really important, because I think working on what value means to you can only come with actually experiencing the thing, not making a value judgment.
Yeah,
that's it.
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. So we must let you go. One last thing. If you were to open a bottle of non-alcoholic wine, would you imagine it's going to last as long, you know, like a day or two, the same as a wine with alcohol in it?
Yeah. Would I imagine? Look, I've tried this as the thing, because I wanted to explore that exact concept myself when I was reviewing some of these products. Mm-hmm. Some do, some don't. The better made products tend to be fine the next day or even on a third day. Mm-hmm. The lesser ones just seem to diminish into their, let's call it, more diffuse nature. By that, I mean that a lot of these lesser products are often already kind of painted in watercolor, and exposing them to oxygen is only going to enhance
Fade
that.
Them in the sunlight, kind of.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Gotcha. So the idea that you want to keep them for that period of time is curious. I would just add, and this is not an advertisement for Non, I'm not sponsored by them or anything like that, but Non have worked on their own patented capsule to plug into their bottles to keep their product fresh over a much longer period of time, because it was a concern to them. And of course, Non isn't de-alcoholized wine, but this is just a great step forward that people are considering such a thing, that there will be a specific plug that you put into the top of a bottle, let's call it, for simple terms, that will help preserve that wine. You know, a lot of people already use Coravan to preserve wine, so the consideration for non-alcoholic wine should, in some respects, be the same. Why not? It's going to cost sometimes them at the same price as a wine that you're, you know, wanting to keep over a couple of days. But look, the higher quality ones, yes, they do. They retain. I mean, obviously, fizz doesn't necessarily maintain its vigorousness in a sparkling wine.
Yep.
Don't put a teaspoon in the top of your bottle.
Oh my god! How a rational adult human being can think that that's actually all right? It's beyond me.
Wow. You know.
That's crazy. Old wives' tales, I guess, or you know, things that Nana thought were good. But thank you. Just as a really tiny footnote before we are letting you go, Matt has called, has texted in and just said, the Guinness Zero, he said, is the demand is so strong that Diageo are building a brand new factory in Ireland just to make Guinness Zero. How about that?
Wow, there you go. Fascinating.
It says something about, and that's why it actually did taste all right, I suppose. They put a lot into it. So there you go. You might find it at P&V Merchants at some stage down the track. Mike, really appreciate it, mate. Thank you. Please, you know, drop us a note or drop me a note, you know, when you discover something else that's newsworthy in this space.
Thank you. I certainly will.
Mm. Enjoy your day and enjoy school holidays, mate.
I'll give my best.
Righto.
Thanks.
Thank you, mate. See you, mate.